On today's episode of The Good Word, Ice Young and Dan Titus join me to discuss Kevin Durant's comments on a toxic locker room, what's going to happen with All-Star Weekend, and Joel Embiid, another surgery? All that and much more coming up right now. Welcome to The Good Word. My name is Vincent Goodwill, senior NBA reporter for Yahoo Sports. A bit of business to get into before we begin the show. We are on YouTube, so don't forget to subscribe to us there. And also, wherever you get your podcasts, rate us, review us, subscribe to us. It certainly helps us out. Now let's get to the show. It is Wednesday, so you know what that means. We got Ice, and we got my man Dan Titus, full in Philly green hat wear. My man, congrats on your Eagles putting the smackdown on the Kansas City Chiefs. How you doing, man?
It felt great smoking on that Mahomes pack, bro. Like, I was in the city, had to fly back for it. My voice is suffering as a result, but hey, it was always worth it, man. Go Birds.
Yeah, that didn't look like much of a game, honestly. Nope. And for those Detroit Lions fans that happen to live in my city and may even share the same last name as me, y'all wasn't beating them Birds. No matter what type of health you had, you wasn't beating Philly. Nobody wasn't beating Philly this year once they started to really, really figure it out. But unfortunately for Philly, in a basketball sense, y'all don't really have that type of dominance or luck, because Joel Embiid told Lisa Salters on Sunday, on Super Bowl Sunday, on Hubie Brown's final game, the God, Joel Embiid had to go and say, well, I'll probably need another knee surgery. I don't know how many knee surgeries this is going to be for Joel Embiid, but I will say this to you, Dan Titus. The last time I saw someone with one of those full leg braces, like all the way up from the top of your ankle to the top of your thigh, that was like the last of Blake Griffin that we saw as a really good basketball player in the NBA. I hope that's not the case for Joel Embiid, but baby, it ain't looking good if he's talking about a surgery right now.
It's not looking good at all. And like, the timing of it, bro, like, the city is celebrating. We're about to win the Super Bowl, and now you're going to give us this depressing-ass news? It's just very unfortunate, but, like, much of it, we already knew this. Like, the fact that his knee keeps swelling up anytime he plays 30 minutes, he can't play back-to-backs, it just comes back to the question that we were asking the offseason. If you knew that this was the case, what would you do when playing in the Olympics? You could have had the whole offseason to have an extended period of time to get your knee back, maybe to a better state than it is now. But now you're telling us you're going to need another surgery and you're going to be out an extended period of time. He's just become the Kawhi Leonard. He can probably only play basketball, meaningful basketball, for 6 months out of the year. So if that's the case, get your surgery now. Why are you still playing basketball?
That's a great question, because at this point, like, when you look at the standings in the Eastern Conference, and you see Philly, as of right now, 20-32, 11th in the East, they're a game and a half out of the Chicago Bulls, who are not trying to make the playoffs. The Bulls have put up the white flag and said, nah, we ain't really for this life. We want to get in the Cooper Flag sweepstakes. And sandwiched between them is the Brooklyn Nets, who are also in the Cooper Flag sweepstakes. And that's the class, that's the tier the Philadelphia 76ers are in. Now, to your point, right, Joel Embiid has barely played half the games that he's qualified to play in. He's only played in 16 games this year. I want Dakota to put up the graphic of Joel Embiid's salary for the next 5 years, because he's on an extension. And this is not an extension that is contingent upon weight. It's not contingent upon health. It's not contingent upon any level of availability. He's making 51 this year, 55 next year, close to 58 in 27, 62 in 28, and a grand whopping $67 million in 2029. That's a lot of loan money. That's a player option, by the way. That's a lot of loan money. I don't care how much money you got coming into the league. This says to me, Philly has to start really rebuilding, because you can't win with him. I don't know if you ride this out for the next 4 years. That's going to be really painful. But do you try to find somebody that can take on Joel Embiid? Because you're not going anywhere with him.
No. And at this point, you're actually incentivized to lose now, because if you're not finishing outside the top six, you're going to lose your pick to the Thunder. So you got to make a choice. If your star player is saying that, yo, I need another surgery, do what the Bulls and the Nets are doing. Mail it in now. Get the surgery done so we can actually get you back and healthy, because we are pot committed at this point. Mm-hmm. There is too many dollars associated to Joel Embiid's name that we have to have him healthy at some point, or else it's just going to be a negative return on your investment, man, because he's not available. So whatever it's going to take, I would put him on the Kawhi plan, leave him out for half the year, bring him back around the All-Star break, and then hopefully you can make a big run for the playoffs when he's fully healthy.
Look, I'm looking up 76ers salary, because you've got Embiid on a max.
Paul George on a max.
You got Paul George. Paul George on a max. And you have Tyrese Maxey, who waited for his max, mind you.
Yeah,
he waited to sign his max. So y'all played him and y'all took him out of Supermax territory. And with the way the guys are dropping like flies, he might have been in contention for Supermax territory just because he played the games.
Yeah.
And you mentioned them being pot committed. Embiid's got 4 more years. Paul George has 4 years. Maxey has 5. If I'm Daryl Morey, or not even Daryl Morey, because Daryl Morey would probably be in the business of saving Daryl Morey's job. But if I am Philadelphia 76ers ownership, Josh Harris, the same group of people who now own the Washington Commandos.
Sketchy.
Do y'all have all this type of cash to be paying out for something that's not giving you anything in return? If I'm the 76ers, I'm making the hard decision this summer to say, you know what? Anything that says the word process on it, we are burning. We are burning the word. We are burning the phrase. It has been the bane of our existence since this whole thing begun.
Facts.
You can trade Embiid, trade Paul George. The only player that you keep in worth a damn is Tyrese Maxey because he is so young. But everybody else, I think that's the only solution to this, Dan, is they got to start just selling off pieces and trying to get bad.
And that's why I'm like, where can you sell? Embiid doesn't become trade eligible until like March 2025 anyway. But if this guy's about to go under the knife again, like how do you recoup that? Like, you're going to be selling for pennies on the dollar at that point if you're getting a guy that just had surgery. So it's going to be at least like 2 years before they can even attempt to get him off the books. And who knows what he's going to look like at 33 years old. Because he already looks like he's 55 right now. He's already looking like Bill Walton now.
That body's breaking down. That's a great pull. We're going to talk about, at some point, it's crazy that we're going to talk about Joel Embiid, who is probably going to make the Hall of Fame and has won an MVP, but has never gone to a conference final, and it doesn't appear like he will. No. We're going to look at Joel Embiid as one of those what-ifs. We're going to look at his gifts. We're going to look at, man, look at the ability. He was the future. He could shoot the three. He could put it on the floor. He's a decent enough passer. Like, defensively, you didn't really want to go anywhere near him. And you're going to say, man, he left so much more meat on the bone. He left so much to be desired. And I'll tell you this, Dan, I saw him play in person on Friday night in Detroit. I've never seen a dude flop and flail around so much. Like, to be that big, and I'm still doing it.
Like, give me some spatial awareness, bro. Like, just chill out.
I'm wondering if he's one of those dudes that is so big that, as opposed to falling on the body part, falling on the hand or falling on whatever, that he just falls to spread the pain out, as opposed to bracing yourself with your hand. I broke my wrist that way, like bracing myself. And I weighed all of 140 pounds. I can't imagine trying to brace yourself on one body part and you weigh 330. But flopping and flailing, I can't abide by that basketball.
And I can't either, because like that's what's endangered his career. Mm-hmm. Like, you're putting yourself in compromising positions that you don't need to. Nikola Jokic is not that as athletic as Embiid is, but he also makes smart business decisions. He plays in the post. He knows what his strengths and weaknesses are. He doesn't try to Euro through the lane or throw it off the backboard and try to catch up. I mean, Embiid does stuff that not many people can do, but he also puts himself at risk far more than any other star athlete that does. And you would think he would have learned by this point in his career that, yo, let me just chill. Let me operate like Tim Duncan as he was aging. kill it in the midi game. You can still play through me, but only do it at like 25 minutes. Why are the Sixers still playing them 30 plus minutes? The whole thing doesn't make sense. And it's just only going to just going to continue to just lose on that value.
Right. He's right at 30 minutes a game. He's right at 25 and 8 and 4 assists a night. Like, he's still a really productive NBA player. A, it just don't look good and it don't feel good. And he don't look good or feel good either. And if it's a matter of, and sometimes we look at players like they want to be hurt. Joel Embiid does not want to be hurt. But sometimes we have to look and say, okay, are you making the best decisions for yourself for now and for the future, because the Philadelphia 76ers don't have a present. And that's the unfortunate thing. Now, speaking of unfortunate present and uncertain future, I present to you the Dallas Mavericks. Could things have gone any worse for them? You got Daniel Gafford in an overtime loss against Sacramento Kings. It looked like a hyperextension. Like, the way that it happened, he was setting the screen, and Malik Monk, like, ran into him after his foot got set. And that could – I'm no doctor. I don't think that's ACL territory, but that is a lot of weight to put on a big man. So maybe it's like an MCL or something like that. Like, who knows? I say I'm not a doctor, and here I am speculating, right? Like, dumb. But if it is something as hopeful as a hyperextension – that still doesn't account for the fact that Anthony Davis might be out for an extended period of time if he has to go under the knife for core muscle surgery. Like, if you thought the trade was silly, that's one thing. But if the trade was done under the guise, Dan, of we're trying to compete right now, they can't even compete right now.
I mean, I don't know how it can get any worse. There was always the risk of Anthony Davis getting hurt at some point. It just cracked me up, the fact that he's like, one moment, I'm here. And then the next moment, like, was like, what, a quarter later? Down. And that's just it's so disheartening for Mavs fans that the front office had to go in this defense wins championships. That's true, but you got two oft injured centers right now, and now they're both down. I don't know if it's a knee sprain. Three. So now, I don't know. The best part of this trade looks like Max Christie. Like, he's played extremely well since coming over there. But the fact that they didn't get more picks, and the fact that they didn't get more added insurance in addition to Anthony Davis, this is going to be bad, because it does look like surgery hasn't been ruled out for Davis. Because this could be, even if he doesn't get surgery, it's going to be at least a month. You don't have a month. Like, y'all need to win now. And this is, if Gafford's injury is any more than, you know, a knee sprain, it's a wrap for the Dallas Mavericks.
It might be a wrap anyway, right?
It could very well be a wrap anyway.
That's the unfortunate part. Like, the fact that nobody, it is a hard sell. The only way that you were going to get people to believe that this trade actually had merit to it was going to be proving it on the floor, elevating yourself from being a 500 team and showing them, oh man, like, you got Gafford, AD, and Lively, nobody scoring on them. Then you add PJ Washington to it, nobody scoring on them. Mm-hmm. And now it's looking more and more unlikely that you will even have a chance to adjudicate the matters in the court of basketball court. That's the sad part for all parties involved. Yeah. But when we come back, it's All-Star Weekend, so I'm going to ask my man Titus if he has anything that he's looking forward to this weekend in the Bay. You're listening to The Good Word here on Yahoo Sports. Back here on The Good Word with Dan Titus. Dan, All-Star Weekend is upon us. I'll be flying to San Francisco to participate in all the debauchery. But on Sunday, there's an actual All-Star game. On Saturday, there's a three-point contest. There's the dunk contest, all that type of stuff. I think the three-point contest has turned into the event that the league is investing the most in. As far as, like, the closest thing to star guys that aren't afraid of embarrassing themselves in front of the world. It's not necessarily, I don't think it's the best shooters, right? It doesn't look to me like, oh, these are the bona fide best shooters. Like, you just look, list, just look at the list. Jalen Brunson, Kay Cunningham, Darius Garland, Tyler Hero, Buddy Hield, Cam Johnson, Damian Lillard, and Norman Powell. That sounds like, oh, we got a bunch of stars in Lillard and Brunson and Cade and Hero, who's going to play in Garland. And then let's also put in Norman Powell, who maybe should be an all-star. Cam Johnson, who's really good. Buddy Hield, who's already in the building, you know, from the Bay Area, or a place for the Warriors, rather. Is that how you see it, that they just basically given up on the three-point contest and they're just going to invest the three? They've given up on the dunk contest and they are just giving into the three-point contest?
Yeah, I think that's kind of been the trend over the last several years. I mean, there hasn't been a real notable star in the dunk contest since probably, like, what, Aaron Gordon, Zach LaVine timeframe?
Yeah, 2016.
And so, like, if they're investing in the three-point shootout, that's cool. I think it's the best event that they have. It's better than the skills challenge. It's better than the dunk contest. So it's better than the All-Star game. But even some of these names, like, I'm not expecting Jalen Brunson to be that great in this competition. Damian Lillard's going to, you know, he's won the competition before. Yep. Buddy Hield, obviously, has got a shot. Darius Garland, I think, has a good chance. But Cade Cunningham, Norm Powell, Cam Johnson, those aren't bringing people to watch, you know, the television at that point. So, I don't know. I'm just looking at a macro level. What is the NBA going to do to save All-Star Weekend? Because the last thing that they can afford is to make it the Pro Bowl like the NFL. Because that is not an event that anyone is watching. And I'm afraid with all these changes and all these theatrics that they're doing to try to save it, it's actually going to do worse damage for it.
You're going to drive more people away.
Yeah, yeah.
And remember, this is Steph Curry. A lot of this is mm-hmm. the league talking to stars about what would it take to be more, to have a more competitive product. And Steph Curry was instrumental in this. And for those who aren't familiar with the format, TNT had a draft last week where it's Team Chuck, Team Shaq, Team Kenny, and then that fourth team will be the Rising Stars, the winner of the Rising Stars game that will be GM'd by Candace Parker. And it was like a theme to the draft, and I don't know if it was done purposely. I'm pretty sure it was done purposely, right? Chuck had the international players.
International guys, yep.
Shaq had the veteran NBA players, and Kenny had the young NBA players. So you got young versus old versus international. And some people have been clamoring for, let's just go U.S. versus international. I say, I don't think you want to see the fan reaction to such a thing. It might not go the way that you think it might go.
Yeah.
And there's not enough international superstars, to be perfectly honest, too. So there's that. But for those who are not familiar with the format, you have those four teams. They're playing up to 40, so it's no timer on it. It's just first to 40 in the, you know, team one versus team two, team two versus team three, or team three versus team four, rather. And then the two winners of that will play a final game. Rosters are, you know, eight guys. I'm not sure if this is going to work. If guys aren't going to play hard, Dan, like, you can do all this gimmicky stuff, right, but if guys play like they don't give a damn, it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter at all. And that's where I feel like that's what they need to address. How do you make NBA players want to actually perform for their fans, take some pride in being an all-star? I think somehow, some way, we got lost in, like, NBA players and NFL players don't really care about this midseason accolade. I don't know how you incentivize them to do that. But looking at the rosters, you talked about, you know, the breakdown between old, new, and international. That old team, I don't see KD. AD's already hurt. LeBron, James Harden, he's not going hard in the All-Star team. Like, they should have blended this better so you have a mix of old and new, so that if the old heads aren't going to go hard, at least you got the young heads to kind of bring it back up.
I understand the idea of giving them something, like, to galvanize, right? Oh, yeah. we're the old guys. We're going to show them blah, blah, blah. Or we're the international players or whatever it is. Or we're the young guys. Let's show everybody how good we are as young guys. Okay, cool. If LeBron doesn't play hard in the All-Star game, nobody's going to play hard. Period.
Yeah.
The tone has
to be set.
The tone has to be set by the guys, and they're so easily deterred from trying hard. they're so easily deterred. Like the first time someone takes a 50 footer and it goes in, or whatever the case may be, or you get crossed over and you don't get help and somebody dunks, then everybody's giving up. Everybody's saying, forget it. And that's an unfortunate part of where this league is. I say it all the time. Everybody is taking withdrawals from the league. Nobody's making deposits and playing hard in an all-star game, a quote-unquote meaningless all-star game. But it's one of the league's biggest moneymakers outside of the playoffs and finals. It is the biggest moneymaker outside of the playoffs and finals. And for guys to not care shows a blatant disrespect for everybody who has come before and a disregard for everybody who's coming after.
Facts. No disagreements on that. I will say, though, what team do you think is going to show out most based on the format?
International guys.
That's what I had too. Yeah,
I think the international guys will win. And then that will bring on a really uncomfortable discussion after, one that I do not want to participate in. That's my man Dan Titus. It is time for our favorite time of the week with Ice Young joining us here on the show. Ice, I want to talk about Breonna Stewart getting, you know, shut out. But I think we got to start with Kevin Durant and some of his comments at Phoenix Suns practice the other day, talking about the trade deadline and the comments from ESPN's Ramona Shelburne that says that the locker room is toxic. So here's that clip.
Yeah, I heard Ramona Shelburne come out and say our locker room is toxic. And I try to tell people who're not around this game as much, is that it's easy to say our locker room is not connected when you come in there 45 minutes before and guys are in their game modes. We're not talking to each other. Four or five guys might be in the training room. A few guys might be in the weight room. It's not a welcoming environment right before the game. You know what I'm saying? And that's just part of getting ready to play. You know? So I think it's unfair and lazy to categorize our team as toxic when you come in there for 5 minutes throughout 4 months. That's the only time you've been in our locker room. Then you can make a narrative. I don't think that's fair to us. But like I said, that's part of the game.
So I'm not going to get into, like, hey, Ramona Shelburne's a friend of mine. Like, she's good people, all that stuff. Katie, do you think Katie has a point in at least the discussion of how his team or how teams will be viewed, like, in just that, like, small snapshot that we kind of have to do, right? But, like, we're not there all the time. But is there a fairness that you have to sort of incorporate in whatever observations you're making?
Yeah. So I think he was very specific with the time that he gave of reporters walking in and giving their opinion about the locker room. Before the game is totally different than after the game. And I can say that as a player. Before the game, I'm headphones on. I don't really make a lot of extra comments, jokes here or there. Like, I'm pretty locked in. That's how I was as a player. Only until I became a pro overseas was I more chill and more, you know, just allowed to, I guess, talk to teammates or make jokes or talk to fans before games. But I would say the moments before a game, locker room, training room, etc., I could understand if it doesn't feel like a welcoming environment. Not for reporters, but just for players in general. Everyone's focused on their own pregame routines. A lot of people are very superstitious about those things, so they do the same thing every single time. And it's not a time where, as an athlete, you should be worried about catering to the media or, you know, putting on a good face or showing that, you know, team camaraderie or this and that. Like, that's not really the focus. The focus is preparing for the game. But on the other side, though, I do think that KD only gave a specific moment in which the media enters the locker room. They also enter the locker room right after games, and then they talk and you see, you know, team dynamics in that way too. And so I think if the same thing was said about after a game, then yes, it would scream toxicity, because whether you're winning or losing, there's some type of communication, brotherhood, team, this or that. You know, we debrief afterwards, we take it off sneakers and talking about what happened. But before the game is a totally different environment. So I could understand what he was saying in that. Curious to see how you feel.
It's weird, because back when I was a beat writer, so this is 15 years ago, I ain't that old, but 15 years ago, right? The protocol used to be availability in the locker room or on the floor or whatever, but you had access to the locker room from 90 minutes before the game, an hour and a half before the game, up until 45 minutes before the game. So that was like a 45-minute period. Players would be going in and out of the locker room. They'd be getting taped and trained and all that type of stuff. Going out on the floor and shooting, like people have the designated shooting times. So you could talk to players in theory before the game, on the record, off the record. Sometimes you're just there to shoot it with them. You know what I mean? Like in a lighter, sometimes players are like a lighter atmosphere, kind of relationship building, you know, that sort of thing, because you didn't always have the space to talk to a player outside of a game context. If you're talking to them after a game, it's usually game specific. You know what I mean? Right. Like sometimes before a game, sometimes the atmosphere could be a little light. And then at 45 minutes, the media is out of the locker room and then the players go into doing what they do. Now, Ice, it is still up until 45 minutes before game time, but it's only 30 minutes of open space in a locker room. And now, because there's so many new arenas and newer built locker rooms, they have more spaces, like a lounge inside the locker room or a lounge that's between the shower in the actual locker room, where you don't really get a chance to see players. Well, players will go and hide. If they know the media's in there, they will go and hide. And sometimes it is about routine and everything else. And sometimes it can, you know, sometimes it is a little intrusive. It might feel intrusive, but it is a time for us to go in there and observe. Oh, maybe he's favoring an ankle. Maybe he's not even dressed or something, you know, that type of thing. And sometimes players will. Sometimes the star players would get and talk to you on the record, off the record, before the game, because they're just in a more relaxed state of mind. For the instance that Ramona had referenced, man, that Phoenix Suns locker room had to be tight, Ice. They was talking about Kevin Durant being moved, or a bunch of players being moved for Jimmy Butler to come there, for Bradley Beal. Like, it was going to feel tight. It was going to feel tense. I don't know if that's the natural space of that locker room, but I think any time before a trade deadline where there's so much speculation, I think it's natural for it to feel, you know what I mean? Like, that's what I think, just naturally. Like, you don't know if you're going to be there tomorrow. You don't know who's going to be there tomorrow. It's going to feel anxious, I think, is probably going to be the word.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. But anxious is different than toxic, right? Toxic implies that there are some issues going on, right? Or that there's a little bit of a riff, or feathers are ruffled necessarily. I think everybody being anxious and not knowing what lies ahead makes sense. And that's probably true of every locker room that we could say across the NBA during trade deadline time, right? Yeah. Everybody's kind of like, what's going on? So, I feel like that's, you know, toxic is different than anxious. But at the same time, I completely understand. I could actually even understand if a locker room maybe was toxic before that time. Because you're talking about players who have played 40, 50 games. They are building chemistry. They're building towards something. And especially with some of the trades that you've seen go on across the league, you're thinking, yo, we're next. You know, somebody big is getting ready to leave us.
Anything can happen.
Nobody's safe. Nobody's safe. And so I could understand, too, if there is even a little bit of a level of, oh, this seems toxic, or doesn't seem like everybody's on the same page, or doesn't seem like there are good vibes. Like, it might not be. It might not be. And then also, too, with the team, we know that, you know, history kind of repeats itself. We know that people keep tabs and they keep receipts. So, you know, there are obviously a couple people probably in that locker room, too, like, yeah, it's probably about my time to go. Let me keep my mouth shut. Let me do what I need to do right now, because I might be on thin ice. I might be the next person out of here.
Now, it's funny you say that, Ice, because Kevin Durant also talked about, you know, being part of speculation of, man, might I be getting traded to Golden State? Now, KD said no to Golden State. I don't feel like doing that. But Luka Doncic was traded without warning. Anthony Davis was traded without warning. Kevin Durant could have been traded without warning, but he wasn't. What type of job, Ice, do you think the Phoenix Suns have to do with repairing a relationship with Kevin Durant? Or is it just them telling him, this is business, you understand how this works, you're part of this league, you've seen how this league works, you've seen how this league works all around you. Is there an uneasiness that you think happens from here on out between KD and the Suns? Or do you think the Suns try to bring him back into the fold for the long term of this relationship?
Yeah. So first thing I would say is being a player in this league and you understand that nobody's safe, you have to understand that it's business, right? That's the first thing, that everybody's main thing is about business, whether it's you collecting your check and going home with your contract, whether it's them getting their money's worth out of you, is all about business. So I think that has to be your mindset, where you can't really allow it to affect, you know, personal feelings, even though obviously it does hurt, especially if you were traded somewhere and they told you, hey, you're going to finish your career here. And then next day you're up out of there. So I think the second thing for KD would be just, and we've seen him in the past get a little emotional with fans, and you know, he's a guy who likes to clap back.
Yes, he does.
Yeah. He's a guy who likes to clap back, which makes it more interesting that it was him. I think that they definitely try to ease tensions. But I think just at the end of the day, you understand it's business. It's going to happen. If they don't feel like this is the best thing right now, and they know that they have the rights to send you wherever you want to go. I think Dennis Schroeder said it when it was like, you know, it's modern day slavery, basically.
I think that's a bit extra. I think that's a wee bit extra. We can't say the S word. When we're talking about millions of dollars. No, no, I get what you're saying. I get the larger point.
I hear you. Yeah, the larger point is you don't have a choice. You know, make all this money, you bring in all this money, you bring in all this recognition, this and that, a player who can get you to finals, and you don't have a choice. At the end of the day, you know, sometimes you don't have a choice in where you go or what you do. Right. You're out of here.
Right.
Luka bought a home in Dallas and was in LA the next day. Like, you don't have a choice.
Okay, put it like this. Mm. And I agree with you. I would generally say there's maybe three guys that you just can't trade in the league. I would say probably three.
Okay.
The fat dude in Denver, and I say that affectionately, Nikola Jokic. The probable MVP, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. Okay, four. Jason Tatum and Victor Wembanyama.
Yeah.
That's just off the top of the dome. Like, if Luka Doncic is the line, and not about Luka being better or worse, but just looking at it and saying, well, who can't be moved? Jalen Brunson can be moved. Jaylen Brown can be moved. You know what I mean? Like, I'm thinking about who's the best player that you could see yourself saying, if he got traded, I'd understand it. Can Anthony Edwards get traded?
Could, yeah. Should, no. But could, yeah. I think with what we've seen with Luka now, it's all bets are off.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you. I think the relationship, sometimes this little love doctor for y'all. Sometimes when a relationship is over, there's no point in saving it. The relationship ended well before you thought it did. That's one thing that I can tell you I learned. Some people quiet quit on you. And it feels like the Phoenix Suns have quiet quit on Kevin Durant. And y'all know, you know what a quiet quit is? It's one of those things where the text messages aren't returned as quickly, or the body language isn't as warm and welcoming. And then, you know, you look around, like nothing subversive is happening. It's not like, oh, you see her. It's like you see her on a date with somebody else. Ain't like she hanging out with a sneaky link or nothing. You know what I mean? Or your guy hanging out with a sneaky link. It's just a lack of investment in you and this. And that's what this feels like for Kevin Durant, a quiet quit from the Phoenix Suns. Now, Ice, Breonna Stewart got blanked. I saw that on Twitter because I was like all in some other stuff Saturday night. I need you to explain that to me, because I don't see how someone that good gets blanked.
Yeah. First of all, shout out to Aaliyah Edwards is the one that beat her, I believe, 12-0. And Aaliyah Edwards, funny enough, a UConn grad. You know, she playing at UConn a year ago. Meanwhile, obviously, Stewie is, you know, one of the best legends that you could name. Mm-hmm. So that was also interesting to me, just the matchup. But to be quite honest, when I was looking at it, I just don't think Stewie was playing all-out defense. And here's the thing about one-on-one. You can get exposed easy if you aren't trying to play defense one-on-one 100%. Like, there's no help here. There's no rotations. There's no, I can play off. She played off of her twice, and she hit a J in her face twice. So I thought it was, I didn't think that Stewie's defense was anywhere near what I've seen her play five-on-five, knowing she has help built in behind her. But on the other side, Leah Edwards took advantage of having the ball and didn't miss. Like, she played a very good game of one-on-one and capitalized. I think another person that's always fun to watch is Skylar Diggins-Smith. And she won 11-3 against De'Erica Hamby. It's also fun, too, when you have these guard and post matchups, because I feel like it's all about who scores first, and it's make and take it. So who scores first, who can find the advantage first and go from there. But yeah, I tell you what, I just love the format of this. Yeah, I love that you can watch players play one-on-one. I believe that everybody's taking it seriously and you know, trying to have bragging rights at the end of the day. But also the matchups that they have aren't just, you know, role-specific. Yes, Stewie was also guarding a four as Aaliyah Edwards, so those are the same. But seeing Skylar Diggins, who's a point guard, beat De'Erica Hamby, who's one of the best five players in the league, is interesting to see. Even Rekia Jackson, who's in her, going to be in her second year of WNBA, beating Jackie Young, a player who I'm about to tell you, I would have picked, would have been in the Final Four. I think Jackie Young is like a matchup nightmare for anyone. Now, she is coming off of a little bit of injury, so she might be a little dinged up. But in one-on-one, like, it can be anybody's game. You figure out what you're great at, you get to your spots, and you make it count. So I also just have loved seeing this format. Like, I think it's so much fun. And the women are hooping. Like, I'm excited to see who's going to win. It's for sure just not going to be the best player. Like, you got to have a little bit of luck. You got to be a very good one-on-one defender. And then you got to be able to get to your spots. So it'll be interesting.
Look, I think the fact that they're willing to try anything and do it, like, the fact is, you can get embarrassed. And nobody likes to get it. Once you reach a certain level of fame or success, losing isn't the thing that bothers you. Embarrassing yourself is the thing that bothers you. And if you get blanked, no matter how good you are, that shit hurts.
I don't care who you are. I don't care who you are. It's embarrassing. It's embarrassing. I think I've had one game in my life where I played one-on-one and didn't score. And I mean, I was like, wanted to cry after, because that just shouldn't happen. It should never happen, especially if I was messing around on TNT and doing that. Like, y'all wouldn't see me for a couple weeks.
Did the dude ask you for a date after?
Oh, my. First of all, it was a woman. I knew you was going to ask that. It was a woman. I wouldn't let no guy beat me. Absolutely not. My ancestors wouldn't accept that. Absolutely not.
Not question. So you made me think of this. All right.
Yep.
Thoughts on Serena Williams at the Super Bowl?
Hey, listen. I feel like I saw everyone say she was waiting to get her lick back. And I think that's the best possible platform you could get your lick back. I also just thought, I don't know. So it's amazing when we see athletes in their second act. You know, we think that they're so amazing and dominant when they're playing. You know, Kobe's an easy example. And then they get to their second act and it's like, man, like, they're really more specific about what they're doing now. And I think we're going to see more from Serena in terms of her voice and who she is. I think after this, I think this might have been a stepping stone. Aside from all the drama and stuff, but just, I think her second act is about to be very, very cool. I think she's picking up more in women's sports. She's investing more. She's doing all the things that you want to see someone who has brought to women's sports do. But yeah, also though, her crip walk, fantastic. Like, if they didn't zoom in, I would not have thought that was her. I would have thought that was a professional dancer out there doing what they get paid millions to do. What a cool moment. What'd you think about it? What was your reaction?
Hey, I'll tell you this like this. I'm going to tell you like this.
Also, like, go Birds! Go Birds! Sorry.
I should start the show with that. Y'all could gloat. Y'all could gloat. You wear Eagles green. I respect it. I'm not wearing red like for the Chiefs, just so y'all know. This is not a partisan thing. But on a Serena thing, like you said, she had been waiting to get her lick back. Old buddy had been talking about her. and her husband for a long time. So if you're going to get your lick back, you get it back on the Super Bowl. This has nothing to do with, oh, Drake is my ex and I'm thinking about him. That ain't got nothing to do with Jack. That was you talking about me, you talking about my man, I'm going to sit up here and dance on your ass. I laughed. That, ladies and gentlemen, is Ice Young. Ice, appreciate you as always.
You too, fam.
Thanks to Dan Titus and Ice Young for joining the show today. Thanks to Dakota and everybody who works hard behind the scenes on this show. We will be in San Francisco for All-Star Weekend. Don't forget to check out Yahoo Sports on whatever social platforms you consume this stuff on. We're going to have some goodies for you there. Until we get to our regularly scheduled program again, everybody be safe.